the APC podcast, acmepackingcompany.com, SB Nation, Packers Talk, all of the time, even in the offseason, which is now where we are. Your humble producer, Zach Rapport, here reporting live-ish from my bedroom in Queens, New York. The what are they calling this with this weather here? The snow cyclone bomb.
I thought it was a bomb cyclone.
Bomb cyclone. Oh. I think that's correct. Yeah, anyway, that has kept us all apart from each other. Our normal studio digs at the CUNY School of Journalism is closed. So here we are. And here we are. We, as in me, Zach Rapport, at Zach Rapport on Twitter, and I am joined via electronic invisible magic, Ben Foldy, at Ben Foldy. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm here at the Abrams Art Center on the Lower East Side, where for the next little while I'm volunteering at American Realness, which is like one of the preeminent contemporary performance and dance showcases in America. And our, anybody who wants to come should come.
Art cred humble brag. From Ben.
No, I told my girlfriend who's volunteering that I would plug it to get that, you know, coveted crossover Packers podcast listening contemporary dance.
Hey, we cast a wide net here, so
yeah. So excellent. I don't assume anything.
Also joining us via invisible electronic magic is Alex Patakis, our usual host, and you're at home, right, Alex?
I am, and I have not left my home all day. I have not set foot outside, not even for food.
You're not missing much. I had to return a U-Haul truck today, and it was like a journey.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
Yeah, it was not fun.
Well, speaking of not missing much, if anyone did happen to miss the last game of the season, Packers versus the Detroit Lions, you did not miss much. It was an awful game, and I feel okay pretty much putting that to bed and the season to bed and saying we don't need to talk about it. But I don't know if anyone had any observations they wanted to get off their chest before we get into the actual breaking news. There's a lot to get into here in the offseason.
The only observation I have about that game is that it's pretty hilarious that Jim Caldwell gets fired after smashing the Packers, like sweeping the Packers for the first time in 30 years or whatever it is, like smashing them the last game of the season, finishing with a winning record, being the winningest Lions coach in like since like the 50s, I think. And that's your like final will and testament with that team. But, and by hilarious, I mean, it's sad and kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
Hey man, two playoff appearances in 4 years for a franchise that has never won anything is not going to cut it.
It's just like, what do they think they're going to get? I mean, I guess they think they're going to get Winston Moss or something. I don't know.
Maybe. Alex, you have any takeaways from that game or should we just put it to bed?
Well, I feel like we'll probably just talk about it from the, I don't know. Guys quit. It kind of felt like they were as ready for the season to end as we were. But we'll probably talk about that when we talk about players calling everyone else out.
I was going to say, yeah, we'll definitely get into some talk about players quitting and sort of the general sentiments in the locker room. I know HaHa Clinton Dix made some statements. Davante Adams made some statements, which were published today in Pro Football Talk, I believe. But the real talk of the town is big change in Titletown with a shocker, at least I was shocked, Ted Thompson announcing he was quote-unquote stepping down or into a more administrative position. I think I can speak for all of us, although then I will now allow you guys to speak, when I say that this came as a surprise. Ben?
I was surprised, yes.
I feel like the week prior you said something along the lines of people who want Ted gone are crazy, and that's not going to happen.
I don't remember. I honestly, I have like the memory of a Podfish podcast goldfish. But
Podfish?
I do think that people who wanted him gone, like, should not feel vindicated by the fact that he is switching roles. I don't think this is like a vindication of like, we were right about Ted Thompson all along.
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't know how to feel yet because I feel like the next guy is going to matter a lot because I feel like if they hire internally, right, and it's just like the same guys that they've had, and let's say they end up hiring Russ Ball and maybe they do hang on to Elliot Wolf and Brian Gutekunst or one or the other, or both, like, it won't feel that different. It'll kind of just be something that we've all been waiting for years, like him to kind of like gracefully step away and lend over the reins. So it doesn't feel like a real, you know, it's not a firing. It doesn't feel like that. I guess I'm still surprised because I didn't expect it to happen right away, like, and so abruptly, and then also lead to all the changes, like, you know, on the coaching staff and everything. But, I guess, I don't know. I feel like if they just end up hiring internally and then their coaching staff positions, like, those are filled internally, it's just going to kind of feel like a reshuffling, which they've done a few times in recent years, just not obviously in the front office quite as drastically.
Yeah, and... But, Ben, to your point, to you know the people out there who did want Thompson to be replaced. I mean, just to sort of recap his career taking over in 2005, the very first thing he did essentially was draft Aaron Rodgers. 13 seasons, 9 of which included the playoffs. One, of course, the Super Bowl victory in 2010, and I think that fans would be delusional, or maybe delusional is strong, but the odds are stacked against the Packers to have that same amount of success over the next 13 years.
Yes. I mean, well, and the other thing is the more that the tea leaves seem to show, or like whatever the Packers Kremlinology reports are, that Russ Ball is going to be taking over, the more I feel that this was a decision that was, if not made a long time ago, was at least kind of like Ted Thompson is not an impulsive guy. I think we can safely say that after 13 years of watching a team that he manages. And I am, now that I'm saying this out loud, I'm vaguely remembering reading that the board had something to do with saying that Thompson had to go, but I don't think that's...
No, that's been dispelled.
That's what I thought. So
thankfully, yeah.
First off, that doesn't sound anything like the Packers board either.
Post early 90s.
The sense I get is that Russ Ball is going to get hired and that Ted Thompson had, you know, like, and part of why I say that is because if you're really like scrapping and starting new, you don't give those three extensions out right before you make all these other changes.
Yeah.
Like to me, that's just, okay. They decided 6 weeks, however long ago that Russ something else, right. Even if just to assuage those people, I'm a little confused by this media narrative that Russ Ball is somehow a riskier hire because he wasn't a scout. And if Thompson is still in the organization, which it seems like he's going to be, that might just be to assuage those people who are like, well, you know, he's not a scout. And it's like, well, Ted Thompson's still here. So if you really think it's so important to have, you know, a player evaluator of Ted Thompson's quality in the organization, I mean, he will still be here, even if Gutekunst and Elliot Wolf end up going elsewhere.
Just to sort of add some color to that, you know, you talk about how Russ Ball is thought of by a lot of, at least Packers Twitter, where I tend to, you know, cull the depths, as someone who is really just a pencil pusher, a money guy, and he's not a scout. And it's true that he's not a scout, but he is a former player. He does have coaching experience, and he's been in the organization for a long time and has been part of the football business for a long time. So he's not just, you know, he's not just a finance guy.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
That's not to oversell him as a scout, though, but still.
I mean, I think, like, I mean, I guess there is, I think there's some valid concern. I guess my concern would be that if there's been, like, this kind of line of succession, but that plan hasn't really been disclosed to anybody, that the guys who end up getting passed up for Russ Ball, who are the football guys, are going to end up leaving. Like, we've already seen Alonzo Highsmith leave and have some pretty negative things to say. So,
yeah.
I mean, like, while it does seem like kind of a smooth transition, if, in fact, like, Elliot Wolf and Gutekunst are gone, and then you have a guy, and I'm not saying, like, Ball can't evaluate talent. I don't think playing football means you're an evaluator. I still think, like, his greatest strength is probably as a negotiator and kind of handling the cap. Otherwise, like, why hasn't he been evaluating talent, you know? Like, and he is really good at that, by the way, because the Packers seemingly always have favorable situations, even with their high-paid players. But I guess, like, I don't know, that whole Alonzo Highsmith thing, like, I mean, I'm glad that the stuff about the board got dispelled because that was kind of concerning. But that was, like, the second most concerning thing to me was seeing how this guy who was, like, really well-regarded by all the fans and kind of felt like one of those, you know, right-hand guys to Ted, seemed like he was, like, really pissed off on his way out.
Yeah,
like,
and just to clarify for listeners.
He had some things to gripe about.
But, I mean,
that, But his stuff makes sense. Sorry, Zach, you're going to recap his comments?
Yeah, I just sort of wanted to clarify for anyone that wasn't in the loop on what Highsmith said on his way out the door, and of course getting the job in Cleveland with John Dorsey, essentially saying things like, you know, it's good to be in, you know, in parentheses, Cleveland, in a place where I feel like I'm trusted. And I think the more I read into those comments, I think, you know, he wasn't someone who was actually going to be considered for the GM job, and I think he felt burned by that, and I think that's justified.
Yeah, sure. But that, to me, also speaks to the fact that they know who they're going to hire.
Yeah.
And they always knew who they were going to hire, and that...
Well, I want to talk more about that because Mark Murphy, in his statements this week, said that they were working with a search firm, which I thought sort of stands in contrast to the idea of already knowing who you're going to hire. But I wanted to jump back really quickly.
Well, then even that got walked back a little, though, because they said that the guy that they work for has already taken a contract with someone else, and he only works with one team a season.
Well, it's not that the Murphy of the team didn't walk that back. It's just that Tom Silverstein, in a piece that he wrote recently, just sort of pointed out sort of that existing relationship, and that person at that firm has that rule. They only do one GM search for an NFL team per offseason, and by the way, they're already employed. So there's no statement from the team about that, but there's a journalist saying, hey, that doesn't really hold water. But Alex, to your earlier point about Russ Ball and scouting and passing up guys like Elliot Wolf and Brian Gutekunst and then risking losing them. I was talking to our corporate overlord, Evan Tex Western, earlier today about who we might like to see in a GM role and his fear really with hiring a guy who's basically a numbers guy in Russ Ball is that at that point, it's fair to say on some level, you're only as good as your scouting talent. And if your scouts leave, then you're just a money guy, a money ball guy who, you know, can't evaluate talent.
Yeah, it's a four-phase process, Zach. It's what is it? It's player evaluation, it's player finance, player performance, and player something. I can't remember the fourth.
And for the listeners, Alex, you are referring to a lot of the tropes and platitudes that were brought out in Mike McCarthy's very lengthy press conference today.
Oh my God.
As of Thursday.
It was maybe an all-timer.
That was a gem. Such a good press conference.
We got another loser's mentality drop.
Loser's mentality.
When Jason Wilde was asking him about, like, does this
a warrior sometimes?
when Wilde was asking him if any of this happens, like if Anthony Barr doesn't break Rodgers' collarbone, which is a totally fair question, and I think the answer to that is like maybe, but definitely, I don't think the coaching changes. And we got his thing at the end about everyone cleaning their own house, which I can't stop saying now, which is so awesome.
Well, we'll come back. Well, can we come back to that? Because I want to say that this idea that the GM needs to be, you know, it's not a game of Madden, right? Like, there's not one dude pushing all the buttons and scrolling through all the menus and doing all the scouting at the draft. I mean, a GM is, at its core, someone to run an organization. And to say that that person needs to be the person who also needs to evaluate all the players, you know, is responsible for basically every, you know, like what you need is a good administrator, what you need is a good manager, and you don't necessarily need a good scout. And yeah. I could see a good scout being, you know, you could have just as many problems as having somebody who gets too attached to certain players. I mean, which is something you could never say about Ted Thompson, you know, he was not a sentimental guy. But I think you've seen some other, you know, I think one of the reasons John Dorsey actually kind of screwed Kansas City up is because he couldn't manage a cap to save his life. So I think this notion that I think Russ Ball, if nothing else, at least knows who to listen to. And maybe I'm reading too much like into like Machiavelli's kind of notion of leadership, that the best leader isn't the person who knows everything, but the person who knows who to listen to.
Right.
And I don't see any reason to think that Russ Ball wouldn't be that person.
Again, I just think my only concern is that if those people, it feels like the right people to listen to. Cause again, I think even Ted was probably listening to a lot of the right people. I'm concerned that those people won't be there any longer. And then
yeah, I mean,
a situation where maybe he's hiring new guys, like, which I guess is concerning, but could also be really,
but there's always going to be an opportunity cost there. Cause if you sign Wolf, you lose Gutekunst too. Or, like, if you sign Gutekunst, you lose Wolf. You know, like, there's always going to be a loss of institutional knowledge in this process, no matter who they pick.
You know, one comment that I wanted to make is that, you know, you mentioned Ted Thompson. You mentioned, like, being able to listen to the right people to help make the right decision. And I think one of the internal critiques that I've sort of sussed out about working under Ted Thompson is that he hears everyone's evaluations, but in the end he listens to himself, and he is the one who ultimately will make the final judgment as a personnel guy. And so I think that also that is what those Alonzo Highsmith comments really really roll up into when he's talking about now being in Cleveland, somewhere where I feel like I'm trusted, you know, like, okay, you're year after year asking my opinion and then not taking my advice.
Which to me is kind of a laughable idea that you would know that about a job before you start there. And just because of the way that the Browns treated their last management team, I would, like, trust is not the word I would use. But I do, I mean, one of the things that, so a lot of what I'm saying about Ball is taken based on my reading of those two Cone longer features that came out, I think, last year or 2 years ago about him, which is basically all that's written about Russ Ball.
Yeah, Michael Cohn, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Packers News. Those are great articles.
And in those articles, one of the things that comes out pretty clearly is that he is seemingly universally respected by almost everybody he works with. So, I mean, that might all be bullshit, but it didn't sound like bullshit in the article. And especially when it's coming from agents who don't have any vested interest in kind of making a team look better or worse. And also the agents said that he was kind of open to counter arguments and would, like, listen carefully. So I maybe I'm just, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid, but of all the things going on with the team right now, the GM becoming Russ Ball is probably the one that I'm least concerned with.
I guess if we want to move away from that a little bit, because it doesn't really feel like at the end of the day there's going to be anything that's going to shock us, right? Like, even if it's not Ball, it probably would be someone else that we've been waiting, you know, and expecting for a while. Is any part of, like, I don't know, is any part of McCarthy, like, watching all these changes above him and all these changes beneath him, but still, like, just being, like, he's still going to call the plays? Like, it seems like, for the most part, like, a lot of things for him are going to stay the same. Like, does any part of that just, like, feel kind of weird to you? Like, when they opened up the offensive coordinator position, I was wondering, like, if he was going to seriously evaluate, like he did a couple of off seasons ago, and be like, you know what, I'm bringing an out-of-house guy, and he's calling the plays, because I got to focus on all these other things now, because his staff is, you know, it's going to be really new. He's losing a lot of guys he trusted for a while. Like, I was kind of hoping for that.
That's a hard question. I mean, like, yes, at face value, weird. It's also a hard question specifically regarding offensive coordinator to answer, because I don't know if any of us can really say with any degree of certainty what the offensive coordinator in Green Bay does.
I have no idea.
I mean, I guess we knew it. We knew what they did when it was Joe Philbin, because they talked about it a lot more, and it seemed like he kind of ran practices. I don't really know what it was when it was Edgar Bennett, and I don't know why he's being reassigned.
Let's pause for a second on the offensive coordinator, because you mentioned Joe Philbin, and now I'm seeing names tossed around to fill that role that are former Packers coaches. Joe Philbin, Ben McAdoo. Was James Campen mentioned too? I mean, it seems.
Who was mentioned too?
James Campen.
Yeah, but he's on the team still.
Oh, yeah. What else am I thinking? I feel like there's a third name that I was thinking of, but. That might be it.
Those are the three names that came out.
Either way.
I can't remember. I think it was in Pro Football. I'm trying to think if there's any other former coaches that went on.
Can I just say flatly, like right off the bat, Ben McAdoo, that's a hard pass for me.
Yeah. Like
That's going to have to be a no for me, dog.
Yeah, that's a no for me. I feel like if we learned one thing over the course of Ben McAdoo's tenure as the coach of the New York Giants, and we are all here in the New York market, sports market, is that he has no original ideas, it seems, offensively. It seems like he came to New York, tried to bring what he remembered of the Packers offensive scheme to New York, which is a bad idea, and then just had no idea how to adapt that over time, and it just was a big flop.
And he also lost the room, like, instantaneously.
Completely.
Oh, yeah.
And talking about not holding players accountable, they put Ereck Flowers out there for the majority of their games at left tackle when he was terrible, and then he and their backup tackle quit on the team. Their first-round pick from 2016 has been so vocal about being so done with them, and he suspended him multiple times. I mean, like, that is the biggest cluster, you know what.
I don't know how you...
Bench Eli.
Yeah, not to mention that he was on board with that.
And the Giants, you know, what we're here kind of, people are worrying about Russ Ball, but at least we're not getting anywhere near Gettleman or some of the other teams that other people that teams are going to be stuck with in the next couple of weeks.
And then lastly, he alienates Odell Beckham for having fun on the football field. Yeah. When Odell Beckham is the reason he's employed, like, come on. Yeah. Hard pass. Sorry. Also, just don't want that buffoon anywhere near my team.
Questionable haircut. Just going to go say that too.
Bad mustache.
Baby Ben McAdoo, though.
What about Joe Philbin, though? The questionable haircut's not a problem because he's essentially bald. Packers had a lot of success under him. How do we feel about him?
I don't have too strong an opinion on Philbin.
Me neither.
I see some people I trust or would be excited with it. Honestly, again, we're in this position where it's like, until I know what the offensive coordinator in Green Bay is doing, it's hard for me to get that excited about.
Yeah.
The Packers created such a weird parallel structure. Like Winston Moss is an assistant head coach. Like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah. And Mike McCarthy actually spoke to that a little bit in his press conference today, saying over the years, you know, they've had to get creative with the way that they promote people internally to create new opportunities for coaches to keep them in house and yet keep them satisfied, give them, you know, title raises and sort of keep their career, moving forward in some way while still retaining them. And I think in a lot of ways that has actually created a lot of legacy employees and kind of stale mindset. So, I'm nervous and excited about the transitions to come, but maybe more nervous.
One gets the sense that a lot of what's going on right now is kind of a clearing out of redundancy.
Yeah. There's a blood transfusion.
That's not a knock on anybody. Like, and some of the people who've been let go are surprising me. Like Mike Turgovich, I think is, to me, the most surprising name let go so far.
Yeah. I guess I'm more surprised by Alex Van Pelt because that was my second place. I also feel like if they were in a situation where they were going to reassign Edgar Bennett, like, I mean, if Van Pelt hadn't made up his mind to leave, I guess, earlier, which I think McCarthy said today.
Alex Van Pelt's contract was up, and I believe McCarthy termed it as a mutual agreement between the two that he would pursue other opportunities, which I'm assuming also meant that the opportunities that he wanted were not going to be offered to him in Green Bay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that makes it interesting too.
Don't worry, guys. I'm sure though that the quarterback was looped in on all that, and his opinion was weighed heavily into the decisions.
Oh, he talked to him on exit interview day, right? And then he said, "That's the last time I'll talk to Aaron." What is like? Do they have like a strict like don't bother me in the offseason policy? Because that's kind of weird.
I bet there are rules in the CBA about how much you can contact players about team related things.
Yeah, there probably are.
But really? Anyway, I totally believe that. Yeah.
Oh, well, just to pick up the bat phone and make sure he's not going to be mad at you.
I was mostly just kind of poking fun at the people who were like, oh, like Aaron is, you know, he's clearly in the know on this stuff, or he's going to be mad. But it's like, well, I don't know, man. The guy just wants to win championships, A, and B, like, no, he's the quarterback. He is not a front office guy. He is not in the loop. That's not how it works.
And also, you don't think he should be in the loop? Like, you don't think someone like Aaron Rodgers should be... I mean,
there's a difference between out of the loop and like in the loop. I mean, that's a stupid.
He's
thing
not
to
okay.
Say
okay. Okay. Let
loud.
Me rephrase. He's in the loop, but he's not in the room, right? So it's like he's not going to find out on Twitter that Alex Van Pelt was let go. They're going to talk to him about it.
No, I understand. But like, I would run it by him beforehand. I know a lot of people disagreed, and I went back and forth with Peter Bukowski on it. But like, everyone's like, "Well, that's because Aaron thinks he's smarter than everybody." But in this instance, he is. Like, this is not Belichick and Brady. Like, this is a scenario where you just learned that Rodgers is the reason that all of these people around him have actually like been employed for a while.
Well,
and now I would trust his judgment. Like,
I wouldn't ask him like a straight up or down. Like, I wouldn't give him a veto position. But I'm sure that his relationship and working relationship, and his general sense of kind of what could or couldn't happen with someone new, is taken into account kind of holistically throughout this process.
Here's why I think it's important, because you're in a scenario now where this could be Mike McCarthy's last year, and you're going to go into like a new regime, and Aaron Rodgers is in need of extension. Now, he could sign that extension like in the next week or so, and this could all be stupid, and we joked about the opt-out thing. But like them getting rid of coaches that he really likes and he's very close with, and all of like the more turnover there is, like the more likely it is that he doesn't finish his career in Green Bay, which is why I would like, I would literally, I know it sounds stupid because like it's almost like, you know, what happened with Brett Favre and then we regret it and he becomes someone we hate, but like I am making sure that like I do everything in my power if I'm McCarthy too to maintain that relationship with Rodgers, because and make sure it's a great one. And let there be no animosity between him, because I didn't want to extend his quarterback coach that he liked, because now I'm on the hot seat clearly, and this could be my last year. Like, you got to hitch your wagon to him, man. Like, I'm not saying you give him control on personnel, definitely not. Like anything like that. Like, you know,
not personnel, just coaches.
Right. Well, yeah. I just think like not coaches. Not like, hey, Aaron, should we get rid of Dom? But hey, Aaron, like Van Pelt's your guy. Like that's his. I think it's only because it's the quarterback coach. I think it hits really close to home. And I guess offensive coordinator, but who knows? Like, what Bennett did anyway.
So that way. So can I ask like a hypothetical annoying follow-up?
Yes, yeah, totally.
That's the name of our game.
If Aaron Rodgers is like, no, you can't cut Jordy, like, what do you do?
I would do it anyway. Yeah. Like, I mean, I understand that's a great follow-up question, but I just think I would think that Rodgers, I don't know, I would like to trust him more than to think that he feels that that's like the right thing to do. I don't think they're going to cut Jordy. I don't know, but you're right. That's another thing.
I don't know if they will or they won't, but I do know that I don't think that Aaron Rodgers should be tasked with both carrying this football team on his back and making personnel decisions unsentimentally.
And again, I think that's
a lot to ask of somebody, even somebody with an occasional savior complex, you know?
I mean, I think Thompson proved over and over that he doesn't necessarily listen to Rodgers, because Rodgers lobbied for Julius Peppers. They didn't bring him back. Rodgers lobbied for Charles Woodson. They had no interest in bringing him back. Rodgers lobbied for Jared Cook, and they didn't bring him back. So, like, and I think he probably does some of that so publicly in the media because maybe he feels like his voice isn't heard to the degree where it should be. I mean, well, that's speculation, but I'm just, I mean, like, it's an interesting thing to think about, I guess.
When he signs with the Browns, I look forward to the, you know, it's good to go somewhere where I'm trusted. All right. So let's talk more about coaching issues. Cause I mean,
wait, you guys, we haven't even mentioned Dom Capers' name. Isn't that weird?
We'll come back to that. Oh, okay. And where do you want to go?
Well, because you just brought up the fact that, like, you know, and this has come up, been talked about kind of around twice, is that you said McCarthy has 1 year. He's kind of on a – he has 2 years technically, but he's kind of on a show-me 1 year with a new GM. Do you think that hinders the ability to attract, like, DC talent or like coach talent? Like, do you think people are going to be reluctant to hop on board with somebody that they don't know is like coming in and putting a whole system in place? Or do you think it's appealing because you're like, well, McCarthy could be gone in a year and then I could be first in line?
I think with the defense, with the talent that actually already exists on defense, and with the fact that you have the all world quarterback on the other side of the ball, I think it's a very appealing job.
I mean, I would have to still think that it is, but
yeah, I think Rodgers, like, knowing that they are, you know, just being good enough on defense away from probably contending, I think it still is an attractive job.
They're an average defense away from, like, the NFC Championship game basically every year.
And I think Rodgers staying healthy.
Yeah, and Rodgers staying healthy. But, Ben, what I think you alluded to, like, I don't know. I think guys probably think differently. I would venture to guess there are some guys who think, like, if I go in there and do a good enough job, like, maybe McCarthy's contract situation is what it is, but I could, you know, that could be where the upward mobility comes in while being able to stay with the organization.
Yeah, so. I don't know if Fangio would be that guy then. I don't know. Somebody like Mike Vrabel could be that guy.
It's weird because all of this, like how different we're talking things can be, and like guys coming in, like they could just, like, again, it's like, I still think internal hires are like where they're almost always going to lean. So
except they got rid of so many people just now that I don't think internals, like, at least for a defensive coordinator, it doesn't seem like internal would be the way to go.
Well, focusing on Dom Capers for a second, you know, we in the last few weeks of the show have kind of in a joking manner saying like, oh, at the end of the season, we wouldn't be mad if Dom Capers decided he wanted to spend a little bit more time with his family. But I was actually pretty surprised to see mere hours after the last game that he was just straight up fired. I don't know if you guys were surprised by that or if you thought there was going to be a more mutual parting of ways.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know how. I think it was going to happen either way.
Yeah, of course.
And on the tail of that performance, it wasn't hard to just be like, all right, we're going to get this over with. The more I have to sit in this uncertainty and unpleasantness of the uncertainty of the last week or so, the more I feel like there's actually a plan that I'm not privy to. And most of the things I know about this franchise, or think I know about this franchise, point me to an idea that a lot of these decisions were made a long time ago.
Yeah. Zach, I guess if you didn't expect him to be fired, or maybe it was the timing and like how abrupt it was, I mean, do you think they should have afforded him an opportunity to, like, again, like we keep saying, like, reassign or, you know, take on some role? Or
I think maybe they
paint it as a retirement.
Well, I think, like Ben was saying, that there's a lot more behind the scenes that's going on. There's a lot more moving pieces than we on the outside are privy to. And so I would have to believe that that they had many discussions over the course of the season with Dom, and he probably just made it clear that he is a DC or bust. And so if that is the option that he's putting on the table, then they have to fire him because he wasn't good enough.
Yeah, totally the right move. I mean, I still, you know, it was time. But, I saw, like, a lot of people tweet out the numbers, like, over his tenure. It's still, I think he'll be remembered for all the blowout losses and their defense totally failing them in the playoffs. But he did a lot of good things when he was here. So
yeah,
that's,
yeah.
You know, it's like, we'll kind of miss you, but also it's just time.
And on balance, I think if you average everything out, it's still got a lot of production. But not that I'm an analyst, but if I can wear that hat, I just feel like over time the system got harder and harder, the scheme got harder and harder to sustain when you get more and more young guys like Charles Woodson drop off, and you just don't have that savvy veteran talent on the back end to bolster a very complicated scheme when you start to rely more and more on young players, and especially in the last 2 years, which were injury riddled, the whole thing just falls apart, and it was hard to watch.
All right, so the obvious segue here is to HaHa Clinton Dix's comments.
Let's do it.
Yes,
I'm not that into his comments. Am I the only person who reads those and I'm like, I'm not that convinced that he is very self-aware of the way that he played this season?
Yeah, no, I tweeted as much as soon as I saw those comments. Like, oh, did I miss the part of HaHa Clinton Dix's comments where he talked about how he expects more of himself? I must have.
Yeah. I think we're all kind of in the same boat.
Well, also and the players he named. Like, I'm like, I don't think Chris Banjo not being here was the issue, buddy. Like,
That was clearly just like a friendship that they had.
He was so specific about these kind of like special teamers. Like, it's like Sean Richardson, Chris Banjo, Jared Bush.
Yeah. And Sean Richardson isn't in Green Bay because like he had a serious neck issue twice.
So the follow up to like the HaHa stuff is that, unless Mike McCarthy's on some four-dimensional chess shit where by calling out Demaryius, he's indirectly calling out HaHa, who's the real target of his, like, ire. You know, today Mike McCarthy went after Demaryius, who is one of the only people who played well in that role this season. And for, you know, for not having his own house in order, or whatever he said, quote-unquote. And to me, like, HaHa is the one whose own house looks like shit as he's calling out, you know, management and pissed about Dom Capers leaving. It's like Demarius is the one who fucking played. Haha is the one who, you know, watched Bird come down with a season-ending touchdown in front of him without throwing his arms up in the air rather than trying to make a play. And I like Haha Clinton Dix. This isn't like me being like, fuck you, Haha. But I don't understand why Mike McCarthy feels a need to pour gas on the Demarius Randall, you know, locker room cancer fire. At this juncture, it seems particularly weird to me.
Yeah. It must have gotten really bad between him and the team. Like, between the trade Demarius stuff. Yeah, like, between the trade stuff we talked about, like, early in the year and a few times on the show, and between McCarthy seemingly still being really miffed with whatever goes on behind the scenes, and it's more than just Twitter.
Like, yeah. I mean, that makes me wonder if Demarius is who Haha is calling out when he says, like, we have guys here who want to make Pro Bowls, we have guys right. here who want to do this.
Yeah, and in which case, like, I mean, they're, if that's, like, the thing, that's the narrative in the locker room, and that, like, Demarius is a selfish one, then I kind of get why McCarthy would defend one and go after another.
I get it, too, but I also, like, if he's going to be the best player in the secondary while trying to make a Pro Bowl, I don't care. Like, he's still going right. to be the best player in the secondary at that point.
Yeah. And I think what McCarthy kind of alluded to today, and where I think a lot of Clinton Dix's frustrations came from, that probably just came to a tipping point at the end of the year, is that I bet you in his mind, while we kind of view him as someone who might have been selfish this year and not really like sold out for the team, I think Clinton Dix feels like he gave everything to them because he had to play a different style than he wanted to, and probably played through some injuries, because what McCarthy said about the whole, like, he had to play like a two shell safety all season.
Yeah.
When, like, the previous 2 years before that, he was one of the best tackling safeties by Pro Football Focus's metrics, and like was kind of that just like, you know, ball hawk slash just like, you know, go make a play guy that they haven't had back there in forever. Like, I think he felt like kind of neutered, if I had to guess, and he's probably pissed off about that. But something's going on, man.
Well, and I think also to kind of put a bow on that, and McCarthy said basically that it was a common theme in his exit interviews among the guys that leadership needed to be better in the locker room. That's a paraphrase, not a direct quote, but that's sort of, I think, something he said to sort of like put a bow on talking about Haha and Demarius as well. I don't know. I didn't come away thinking that he was pouring gas on the Demarius fire, because I think that he did go out of his way to praise the strides that he made down the season and said that he ended up playing some of the best football of his career.
And the whole lack of leadership is the risk you run when you're going to be the team that is going to, you know, willingly show guys like Julius Peppers the door. Like, yeah. Julius Peppers' cap hit was not going to be that astronomical. He had a productive year. And I know that was a narrative like on Panthers week or whatever, like, oh, did they make a mistake letting him go? But I mean, if you're going to be the team that feels like we'll get on no matter what without, you know, guy X, like, the risk you're going to run is that you're going to have all these young guys coming in, and like, how do you expect like Josh Hawkins to be a leader? You know, like how do you expect Reggie Gilbert to be a leader?
Well, I want Reggie Gilbert to get on the field to start.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, they can grow into that role, but it's almost like by the time you grow into that role in Green Bay, it's like you're at that point where it's like, oh, is it worth it? Do we want to give this guy a third contract? Like,
yeah,
you know, like Nick Perry a couple years from now may very well be a leader, and it might be a situation where he's got a big cap hit on the final year of his deal, and we're like, oh, we can't have him back because we're so, like, Green Bay, we're so cap conscious, we're so, like, better 1 year early than 1 year late that it's Yeah, I mean, that's how it goes. The same thing happened with Woodson. Like, look at the leadership of the secondary that was lacking when they let go of him. It's one of, like, the all-time leaders. And he would have come back and played for really cheap.
It was him and Tremont, and it was a whole generation. And Shields didn't. And Shields got hurt, which is, we put a lot on that, but it's also true.
Yeah, things would look a lot different if he was still healthy and playing at a high level. In the secondary, because they made a big investment in him, and unfortunately, that
They get burned by that too, you know. So, but I mean, honestly, to me, that's the most worrying stuff. And I don't know maybe I probably won't feel this way by the, you know, emotions are high after a disappointing season. And a lot of these guys will take a summer off and heal up and come back, and there'll be some, you know, there'll be new faces and there'll be new draft picks, a ton of draft picks, by the way. Yeah. And high and draft picks.
And a mid first round pick. Yeah. I mean, that's exciting.
And enough supplementals to jump in higher again if they want. You know, they have like 2 third rounders, 2 fifth rounders. They're stocked.
That's the exciting part of it. And really, I really hope this quarterback class, as you get closer to the draft, like becomes like, you know, what people thought it was going to be, because the more quarterbacks taken at the top end of the draft, the more defensive talent there will be.
Agreed. Except I would actually be happy if the Packers took Lamar Jackson. And I know
that. Oh, I would be very happy.
Everybody's heads would explode, but I would, it's like, it's the last thing that'll happen, but I would be very happy if it happened.
I mean, can we, just like on that note, and I know this is kind of coming back around and kind of a bad segue, but as part of Mike McCarthy's press conference, he really is ready to die on this hill and had a lot of praise for Brett Hundley and what he thought was the progress that he made over the course of the season. And Ben, I know that you have, I wouldn't say been a Brett Hundley defender, but you've been someone to say, like, let's, you know, pump the brakes on the abuse and take a look at the big picture and see what's really happening. But I still, by and large, saw, for the most part, bad quarterback play. I don't know. What do you guys think of his willingness to still go to bat?
As far as McCarthy's willingness goes, I see a good coach, you know, taking the heat off a player who was put in a bad situation.
Okay.
And I don't have any problem with McCarthy saying, you know, taking the heat for a third year player who with 8, you know, with 5 starts under his belt or whatever it is. I guess it's 8 starts. Whatever. I don't have a problem with it. I don't know what else he could be reasonably expected to say that wouldn't be setting up, you know, the next Brock Osweiler or Tom Savage or some player that, you know, as soon as they have to go in, everybody in the league lets out a collective groan.
Yeah.
And I don't see any value to the Packers in setting up Brett Hundley to be that player. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The statements that he made really just sort of, I raised an eyebrow thinking that, like, well, this is just, you know, red meat to the Hundley hitter. So I wanted to get your guys' take on that. Another thing that he did say about that stretch of games with Hundley is, you know, there was a 2-game stretch where they had, I was like, I don't know. I don't remember the exact number, 12, 13, 17 drops, basically. I don't remember the exact number, but he was basically saying it's not all on Brett Hundley. Like, guys got to catch the ball, guys got to execute, and no one played well.
There were definitely some shitty drops in week 16 and I guess 15, but maybe 17 too. I can't really remember 17. It was kind of a blur.
It's just a blur of mediocre football.
It was, yeah. Oh, mediocre is being very generous.
Where do we go from here, guys? Where do we go from here?
I mean, here's the good news of all this is that there's like a bunch of exciting things are going to happen that we won't have 6 months to know. It'll take like months to know if any of the things that happened were actually good.
Yeah.
But it'll be months of us thinking that whatever happened is great, and that's fun. So.
And much like we kind of did and continued to do after the Rodgers injury, and when games became harder to win, and things at times were laughably bad, like, I'm going to be entertained. I think we'll be entertained. It'll give us plenty to talk about, and it's going to be a fun off season because. Yeah. All the change everyone wanted, while it probably didn't shake out the way we all expected and wanted it to, it's here. Like, you cannot say that they're being complacent and just kind of going along status quo.
No, they're cleaning house.
They're reacting to a 7-9 season, and they're
shit just got real. This is this is what it's like to watch an actual football team and not like a mythical organization that never does anything wrong.
Yeah, and when McCarthy says, like, 7-9 is not good enough, the standard is a championship, like, you could say, okay, I guess he means it, because look, all these dudes who are now gone. Meanwhile, that 7-9 came without their best player, but, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure there was going to be a time where we're going to have a conversation if it's an overreaction, but I'm going to enjoy the heck out of all the rumors and it's like those like can't look away from Twitter days now, where you just like always have to have your eyes glued to it because you're gonna miss something.
I don't think we've mentioned this, but Davante Adams just re-signed a good contract for the Packers and is probably gonna be a top 10 NFL wide receiver locked up for the next 4 years. Like,
and Corey Linsley got an extension. And so like Ted took care of business on his way out at least.
Or did Russ Ball on the way in?
Yeah, either way I'm cool with it. I'm just glad Devontae's back.
Well, speaking of scrolling Twitter, I've been doing it furiously while producing the show just to make sure we don't miss any breaking news. There hasn't been anything announced as of right now, 6 p.m. Eastern on Thursday night. But is there anything else that you guys want to hit here? I feel like we covered a lot of ground, and there's going to be a lot of changes here in the next few weeks.
Well, let's go through and say like the one thing that we want to see happen in the next little while. Like, what's one hire you'd want to see? What would make you excited or happy?
Ooh.
The hire I want to see, well, now I believe it's less and less likely, and it's a really popular one, but I guess there's reason to believe Vic Fangio would be really good as a defensive coordinator, and reason to believe that hiring him would then mean a greater shakeup on that staff and, like, a totally revamped defense. So I would be very on board with that.
You stole mine, but I'm going to go with I'm actually going to get on Team Russ Ball.
There you go.
I'm going to say that is – and maybe that's, like, cheap because it's, you know, seems to be the most likely outcome.
Seems ordained, yeah, preordained.
But I'm going to go on the record as an early believer in that decision.
If only to be contrarian with you, Ben, I'm going to go Elliot Wolf.
That's fair. The one thing that I remember Elliot Wolf's name being attached to was when Josh Sitton. That's the only thing I remember his name being attached to, and that did not go well, in my opinion. So I I'm not going to hold that against him forever. But I don't understand why everybody gets so excited about Elliot Wolf. And my only plausible explanation is because you hear Elliot Wolf and you think Ron Wolf and what's not to like. But I'm not against Elliot Wolf, but I Russ Ball seems to have done enough to earn a shot, and I am okay with that.
Yeah, I'm excited because even if they continue with the draft and develop philosophy, I think like you can be a draft and develop team that is still more aggressive than they have been, and I kind of feel like there's a good chance that they'll be a bit more of a player in free agency, especially with all of the outcry of veterans needed. So
yeah, because ultimately,
it could be a really fun offseason.
I agree, because ultimately, and I think that fans forget this, I know I do from time to time, Ron Wolf, the draft and develop philosophy is Ron Wolf's, and he did go out and get and spend in free agency because the team at the time needed an infusion of talent. But overall, the philosophy has been draft and develop, and Ted Thompson's version of that is just far stingier.
Yeah, I mean, like, look at John Schneider, who also has been tied to this, and while he's completely failed to develop and find an offensive line in Seattle, they've been an extremely aggressive team, and this is a guy, you know, and I think he's more of a Ron Wolf guy than he is a Ted Thompson guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. So, like, you can be a Ron Wolf disciple and fall from that tree and still be way more aggressive than Ted. I think that's out there. There's a chance.
Yeah.
I also want to take this chance to go on the record and say that I have absolutely no complaints with Ted Thompson's reign. And I will remember it fondly. Not no complaints.
Yeah.
Like, whatever. I have normal, usual, like, gripes. But, in the final appraisal, I think Ted Thompson was a fantastic GM for the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, he's a team Hall of Famer.
And deserves. I mean, he deserves every bit as much of a street named after him in Green Bay as Mike Holmgren or somebody like that.
Sure.
Yeah. My biggest Ted Thompson disappointment is that we didn't get to see a Packers Patriots Super Bowl, and we have James Bostic to blame for that, or whatever. Brandon Bostic. Not James Bostic.
Whatever. His name doesn't matter.
So, yeah, Bostic. Not trying to crush him, but. Thompson built some teams that were good enough that still didn't get there. So it's not like you can crush him for only how it's not like he had one good team, like one good year.
Yeah.
He had unbelievable success, and some really terrible luck.
Yep. With that, I think we could just sort of put a bow on this talk for now. And there's going to be a lot of developments that will be happening again It is now 6:15 PM on Thursday, January 4th. No new developments yet, but I think that we haven't talked about it, but maybe we can hash it out on air. We'll be here every week, at least through the playoffs.
Yeah, why not?
Oh, for sure. I got to give weekly updates on my Saints +900 bet. Although now I'm kind of starting to lean towards the Vikings. I don't know. I don't really see anyone else in the NFC other than those two teams.
It's amazing. Before we get out of here, I did want to wrap up the APC Podcast Pick'em League because we now have a winner. And I don't... Yeah, exactly. Let's play... There we go. I haven't busted out the air horn in a while, and I promised all year to have like some kind of more ceremonious music while we do this, but I never got around to it. Sorry about that. But anyway, the winner is Victor from Brazil, a familiar name on the podcast. His brother Mateus. Congratulations to Victor. His brother Mateus holding the lead for, I believe, 14 of the 17 weeks, maybe 15, but the dark horse. In Shakespearean poetic justice fashion, his brother coming up from behind and winning the day. So, Victor, congrats to you, and thanks to everybody who participated. It was super fun. It, as I stated at the outset, proved how mediocre, at least I am, at picking games. But, Victor, if you would email us, theapcpodcast@gmail.com or DM us, as I know you have previously, at theapcpod on Twitter. Give us your mailing address. They're in Brazil, and we'll get you a T-shirt, and we'll figure out the logistics of all that.
International shipping fees.
We'll cover those.
Covered under our corporate overlords' budget.
Exactly. We're going to put that on Evan Tex Western's tab. I think that we should polka. What do you guys think?
It's too late now.
The band has been struck up. So, lots of developments to come here. Shake up in Titletown. It's been a crazy couple days, and there's lots more to come. So, for Alex Patakis and Ben Foldy, at Alex Patakis, at Ben Foldy, I am at Zach Rapport on Twitter. Follow the show at the APC Pod, and keep it locked in here. This offseason is going to be really exciting. Give us a rating on iTunes, subscribe. All that nonsense. Tell your grandma that you listen to the show, and give her a kiss for me. I don't know. This is getting weird. All right, we'll see you guys next week.
Peace. Later.
A toast to Milwaukee. So raise your glasses high.